Chapter 14. Lawrence could not have imagined any more awkward and inconvenient period to their journey than to be kowtowed to in his plain and travel-stained gear by a dozen men better dressed on the damp sand of the shore, when Temeraire had said, "I am Lung Tien Chiang, and this is the Emperor's adopted son, William Lawrence," in Chinese, before Lawrence could forestall any such introduction. The adoption had made a useful and face-saving diplomatic fiction at the time of its promotion on both British and Chinese sides. To use it for personal gain in the present circumstances felt to Lawrence at once dishonest and wretchedly embarrassing. Now these men could not fail to perform any of the formal obeisance which their court etiquette demanded, however visibly, however plainly inappropriate when directed at Lawrence, without showing disrespect to their own emperor, a crime punishable by death. The ritual had for audience Galandu and several other of the native men, who looked on with interest. What structures of a permanent sort stood upon the shore all looked to be of the Chinese style, amongst which, however, the peripatetic natives seemed to be entirely comfortable. There were several younger men, hunters, bringing in game to cooking pits, and women could be seen working in the enormous courtyard of the pavilion and also peering down with interest at the ceremony. If the Chinese gentlemen found the act objectionable, they concealed their feelings, and having risen from the sand, invited them into the pavilion, where Lawrence halted on the threshold, dismayed. A yellow reaper, perhaps a week old, was sleeping comfortably on the stone beside a small fountain, and there were several native women sitting beside it and working with some rocks. "Oh, here you are," the dragonet said, lifting its head and turning, said something to one of the women in what sounded like their tongue. "I am Tarunka," the dragonet added, and a little critically. "You have been quite a long time coming after me."
"As long as you are hatched, I do not see you have anything to complain of," Temeraire said, having put his head inside the pavilion. "Who are these people, and what did they mean by taking you, I would like to know?"
"These are the Larakia," the dragonet said, "who had me from the Pijanchachara, who had me from the Wirajuri, and pray do not be angry, for they needed me quite badly. You see, we are sending goods so far that all the directions are in different languages for all the different tribes, and of course all of you in Sydney, and there is no one who can speak to all of them. But now I can, as I have heard them all in the shell," she finished, with some complacency. "And I am learning Chinese too, as much as I can, and they have given me a great many jewels."
"Where?" Iskirka instantly demanded, and Tarunka nosed over a large basket, filled near to the brim with glowing, burnished opals, and the women working around her were polishing still more.
"I do not see much use in just a basket of jewels," Temeraire said later, in private, drinking a bowl of light, fragrant tea prescribed for its cooling properties. "If one had them strung, on gold wire, perhaps, there might be something to admire. One cannot wear a basket, at least not without looking silly."
"Well, I want some," Iskirka said. "I like the way they shine, the dark ones. Granby, I'm sorry we did not bring more gold with us. Do you think there are any prizes we might take hereabouts?"
Granby very emphatically did not. The chief of the outpost was Jiajen, a gentleman of perhaps 30 years of age, young for so isolated a position of responsibility, and full of energy. He had presented to them with earnest satisfaction all the details of the pavilion, established for the comfort of dragon visitors, and beside it across the courtyard stood a large and comfortable house in the Chinese style, offering an excellent prospect upon the harbour. Lawrence disliked extremely feeling inadequate to his social occasions, and all the more so that the Chinese might have expected him, by the grace of his rank, to be more versed than he was. But the courtesies had baffled him in his short stay at the imperial court, and he had not improved in the intervening time. He did not know how to tactfully inquire after their purpose in being here, nor how far that purpose went. Did they think to establish a colony of their own? It did not seem very probable. The Chinese did not have anything like a merchant marine. The little junk in the harbour looked to him a wallowing death-trap, and he was astonished they should have survived the journey, a matter of sheerest luck.
"I suppose you could not have been very comfortable. It must be 2,000 miles of ocean and more," Lawrence said to Jia, doubtfully.
"The journey was tiresome, of course," Jia agreed. 2 weeks nearly without land, but one must endure," which became comprehensible to them that afternoon,
watching as the great winged dragon came in, landing before the pavilion, and yawned hugely before dipping her head to the courtyard's fountain to drink.
"They cannot colonize very well by dragon, at least,"
Lawrence said after a dismayed silence. 2 weeks to China. He did not suppose one could make it in under 2 months by sea, even if the monsoon were cooperating.
"No,"
Granby said judiciously, peering down at the beast.
"She's prodigious, but it is all in the wings now I see her closer. I don't think she could carry more than a ton and go anywhere."
"Which, I am afraid, begs the question," Tharkay said. "Where several tons a week of smuggled goods are coming from into Sydney, unless they have an army of these beasts."
But this theory Temeraire was able to discount, though scarcely with less disquieting news. The dragon, Long Shun Li, was one of barely 4 beasts extant, of a wholly new breed.
"The Crown Prince gave orders they should be bred," Temeraire explained, "to travel long distances. She says it took them almost 3 years to manage, and she is still the only one who can conveniently fly so far. Her year-mates cannot stay in the air longer than 2 or 3 days at a time."
"In 3 years?"
Granby said, watching covetously. The dragon was stretching herself out in the sun, the massive wings glowing amber with a fine branching tracework of darker veins and tendons.
"It can't have been done. It is 20 at the least to work out a halfway sort of new breed, if you don't mind it being half-blind when you're done."
"Oh, it is not that they did not know how," Temeraire said. "She says that her kind were bred by the Ming before, and there is a record of the matings."
"Then why the devil shouldn't they have done it before?" Granby said.
"Because,"
Lawrence said slowly, realizing,
"they did not wish to. Or more to the point, the conservative faction would not allow it. That is the consequence of Prince Yongxing's death."
They were silent, considering the implications for Britain's empire, China choosing to reach beyond, and with the means to do so.
"Do you suppose we'll have to quarrel with them over the place?"
Granby said dubiously.
"I don't know how much of the country we have claimed, or where we are, for that matter."
Lawrence laid out the maps on the floor of their chamber, but they were uncertain enough of their position to make the determination more than a little troublesome.
"I think we are somewhere near 130 east," he said finally, "which would put us outside the border. Cook's claim begins at 135. The Dutch might have something, of course, although I cannot recall." "Well, the politics of it all are past me," Granby said. "But someone in Whitehall will want to know this, and I dare say they would like to know it quicker than 11 months from now, too."
There was more they would like to know also. Tharkay slipped out that evening, and returning could report that the dockyards were not so simple as they appeared. There were pulley wheels upon the jetty, and along the shore paving stones had been laid down in clean lines marking out a road, very broad in the Chinese style, to accommodate dragons.
"With 2 foundations marked along it," he said. "I imagine for warehouses, or barracks, if you care to be pessimistic."
Lawrence could not but be grateful for their presence, whatever the larger political questions. There was a physician of some skill among them for the benefit of Long Shun Li, out of caution for any possible implication which might threaten the health of a new breed, and he had with great courtesy discussed Temeraire's condition with Dorset, and suggested a course of treatment which their supply had further made possible. And besides this, Jia had with great generosity flung wide their stores, and Gong Su had applied himself with great energy. Temeraire had eaten better in 1 week than in the past 2 months, and already seemed to Lawrence much improved.